Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hey everybody, my name is Brian Sippets. Thank you for joining me for the 49th episode of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Of course, we are the official podcast of HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, where you're going to find almost 900 articles, videos, webinars, and programs all dedicated to the training of hockey players. So if you're listening to this and you are a practitioner or you're a strength coach in the college setting, you're going to get a ton of value from the site. Also, it's going to be really interesting for players, parents, anyone who wants to know about the best ways to train their hockey players. So we're excited to bring that content to you. If you want to check out the site, you can check it out for just $1 for the first 7 days. After that, we'd love for you to be a part of the community for just $14.95 a month, or you can pay $149 for the entire year and get 2 months free. All right, one more thing to talk about before we get on with today's guest. We are all set for the third annual Great Lakes Hockey Strength and Conditioning Clinic. Last year, we grew the event again, so hopefully we'll keep that trend going because last year was just an awesome experience for everybody. The date this year, so save this date, mark it on your calendar, is April 22nd, and that'll be an all-day event on Saturday. We're just starting to lock in the speakers now. Won't quite share that with you until the list is complete, but we will get that information out to you here on the podcast. I will say that I think you're going to be excited about this year's guests. So, anyway, on with episode 49. Today we are talking with Miami University's Justin Rothlingshofer about how he uses 1080 MAP and 1080 Sprint as a part of his testing protocol for players and how they're improving players based on those results. It's turning out to be a really great tool for him and something that can and maybe should be used in the collegiate environment. So we're going to get a little bit in-depth with Justin on talking about how he uses 1080 MAP and 1080 Sprint. To go along with this podcast, we have put an article on the site, a lot of screenshots and pictures of some of the tests and the screenshots from how that data is gathered and how it's displayed and what you can tell from all that data. So that's going to be a really useful tool to get a picture of what we're talking about as we have this discussion with Justin. So, all right, let's not wait any longer. Let's go ahead and get on the phone with Miami University's Justin Rothlingshofer. All right, hey everybody, I'm here on the phone today with Justin Rothlingshofer, the strength and conditioning coach for the men's hockey team at Miami University. Justin, this is your second time on the Hockey Strength Podcast, so we really appreciate you joining us again.
I'm excited. I made the cut and was able to come back, Brian.
Yeah, you impressed the first time, so we figured we'd come right back to you. Hey, one thing I wanted to talk to you about today, and this is going to be a pretty specific conversation. The last time I was down there checking out the weight room, I noticed that you're using the 1080 MAP and the 1080 Sprint, I guess, equipment, you call it, the testing, the protocols. So I wanted to know a little bit about that, and we're going to post a video for you online on the site just to see how you're using it with players. But first of all, I want to talk about this 1080 MAP and how you're using that to screen players.
For sure. So the biggest thing about the 1080 MAP, and as us as practitioners know, when you first get players that come in, you do your best to create screens or full body protocols to ultimately see what the athlete is looking like from an asymmetry standpoint, from a movement standpoint, from a injury history standpoint. We have all these things that we do before we even get them working in the weight room. And a lot of it is so subjective, whether we're assigning a number to a specific movement that we're looking at, or whether it's doing something where we're just doing a manual test, or whether we're just putting them through a simple range of motion and making visual cues as to what's actually going on with the body. But what I liked about this was everything is quantifiable. So we're able to see specific numbers in a range of motion, specific percentages of ranges of motion through the upper body, the lower body, the rotational movements, the flexion extension movements from the lower body, flexion extension from the torso. And then from there, utilizing the software that 1080 gives us and the protocols that we go through, we're actually able to see what the actual balance points are within left and right legs, the rotational movements, where we're getting our motion from, whether it's the scap, whether it's the shoulder, the combination of the two, the trunk rotation between the left and right side, the internal and external rotations of the left and right hip. If we're lacking at the hip, where are we getting the motion from? Is it the knee? Is it the ankle? So those are all things that we're able to actually now quantify and actually see where the asymmetries lie. And then once we identify those, we then move into the map and get into the 1080 sprint and get specific power numbers, see the differences between the left and right sides. And it's unbelievable the crossover that the two have. They correlate so highly with one another that it was so obvious that it was just something that I had to do with all my guys, and the improvements that we've seen and decrease in injury again has been phenomenal.
So on the map, how long does it take you to take a player through this?
So the very first time you take a player through it, obviously you have to teach them the movements. There's specific places you have to place body parts and instruct them on how to do it correctly. It usually takes, the first time I would say 15 minutes. But obviously my guys have gone through this 4, 5, and 6 times now. I can get a guy through in about 5 to 7. And it just works like a wheel. A guy hops on, runs through our 12 different movements on the map, basically putting the hip in internally, externally rotated positions, going through trunk flexion, trunk extension, rotation at the hip, all in those different hip internal external rotated positions. And from there, we're actually able to get degrees of motion from the map that's on the floor that we're moving through. Once you actually get those numbers, again, we put them through the analytics portion of the software, and it spits us out a motion analysis that basically gives us the percentages between the left and right discrepancies, and gives us a much bigger picture of what's going on with that athlete. So going back to your initial question, again, the first time you run them through, it's a little bit longer. There's a learning curve there. There's familiarity that has to become about with the player and the practitioner themselves. But as they start to go through it, they start to learn it. They start to get more comfortable with it, and you actually can and roll them through pretty efficiently.
So, you know, for me, it's a system that I haven't seen before. I'm not familiar with it, but I sort of relate it to like a Gary Gray 3D map kind of thing. If you're familiar with
it, it's very, very similar. Very, very similar. The concepts are there. I've never actually worked with any of the Gary Gray stuff, but obviously working and talking with Matt Shaw at Denver about a lot of that stuff, he uses it a lot. Devin McConnell at UMass Lowell, Brijesh, we've all talked about it and run all this stuff by each other, and so very familiar with the 3D mapping, and it was something I was going to say in regards to it is that we see it almost as something that they're damn near identical to one another in terms of what happens and what occurs. The biggest thing is the way we do it with 1080 is just being able to store all the data, have a online cloud that I can basically see a history of. And then what I'm able to do that's awesome as well is be able to take the specific movements that are lacking for each individual. So say rotation isn't an issue for 80% of my athletes through the left and right side. They're pretty equal. Say they're 100% equal on both sides. It's rare that happens, that it's that's perfect symmetry, but just say that that was the case over two or three tests. Continuing to monitor on a weekly basis, I don't have to run them through the entire program, for say, every single week. So on Mondays when we do this with the guys, I can grab two, excuse me, I can grab two tests. I can go hip internal, hip external flexion, and hip internal and hip external extension, plug those in and see where we are at in a comparison of 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, and see if there's deterioration, see if there's maintenance, or even if we're getting better to that degree. And so there's, again, we don't have to put them through the entire map every single time we do it. Obviously you get a complete picture when you do that, but if there's specific areas with each individual athlete, you're actually able to then pinpoint it and move through and track that way.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, I don't know a ton about 3D maps either, because we don't really use either one of those things. But I think it seems like one of the benefits to this, like you mentioned, there's a database, and it seems like this is a little more objective rather than subjective. I think 3D maps is based on your eye. How much of this is an actual, like, assigning a number, and how much is based on your what you see?
Yeah, this is 100% based off a number. You obviously, as a practitioner, you're seeing how they're getting to that number. You're seeing how they're reaching. You're seeing how they're rotating. You're seeing how they're extending. So the more you do it, obviously, just like the FMS, 3D mapping, the more you see it, you're like, wow, you really shouldn't be moving into that position that way, or you're compensating through this side to accomplish the goal, or whatever it may be. But at the end of the day, we get a number. We're able to enter it. We're able to store it. We're able to have quantifiable data, again, to compare from A to B to C to D over the course of a year, over the course of a four-year career, over the course of even an eight-year career, however long you continue to come back and work through the summer or whatever it may be. But we can track this over a longer period of time to see the progress we've made. And I think everything, going back to the first conversation we had, quantifiable data is just something that I just see so reliable, something that's so nice to work with, because you have a hard number. You have something objective that you're looking at and can continue to compare over the course of time and see where you're making strides, see where maybe you're not taking strides, and where there's going to be room for improvement.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, just with the amount of data that you have, it's definitely got to be a nice, I don't know, I guess a nice complement to that. I want to talk about the 1080 sprint and the way you're using that, but real quick, before we move on to that and, like, sort of the applied version or the applied portion of it, how has this affected your programming? Like, I know you individualize pretty heavily. How has this, you know, are you using this pretty heavily to individualize guys' programs, or how does that work for you?
So with all the corrective work that we do, with the warm-ups that we all, that the guys go through, our regen sessions, our yoga sessions, that is where you've seen a lot of tailoring, where we have groups of guys that have a lateral flexion deficiency, or a hip internal rotation deficiency on his left side versus right side. A lot of times, what I found is your left-handed shots will all have certain deficiencies, and your right-handed shots will have certain deficiencies. You'll then notice that your forwards, who don't have to pivot going backwards or don't have to open up going backwards, have certain deficiencies, where your defensemen have others, where they're always pivoting and always having to go back on pucks, or always having to change direction from going from backwards to forwards or forwards to backwards, where your forwards are always skating forwards. So the hip rotation is a little poorer in our forwards than our D. And then obviously, whether they're a right or left-handed shot, they'll have a favorable side, whether they like to pivot to the right or the left. And that really hit home with a lot of our coaches, because as I started talking to them and saying, hey, player A, defenseman, is having doesn't have the hip mobility through his right side that he does on his left. And our defensive coach would be like, well, makes sense that he has trouble pivoting to his right side, doesn't it? Yeah, he has trouble opening up, so he can't get that angle through his hip to get back on a better angle to the puck, where he kind of has to go around, or it seems that he's going slower through that motion. So the ability to have a solid data point to then relate to our coaching staff and say, okay, this is why, and then be able to work on it with him, and then have a quantifiable data again to confirm the fact that they're getting better, not only just saying, our coach is saying, man, he's pivoting a lot better that right side. Yes, we also have 30 degrees better range of motion, instead of being, because we're always going to be able to work through a 360 degree range of motion. That's just how it's going to happen. We have to as humans. So when we're looking at what we're getting out of our hips, the way that this breaks it down is 100%, 100%. So it breaks it down into a percentage. So if we're not getting 100 and 100, and maybe the left leg is 80, the right leg has to be 120 degrees if that's the range of motion that we're hitting, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So maybe, again, to this player that we were talking about, it was 140 to 60. Well, now we broke it down, and he's now at 110 and 90. So it's still not perfect. Will it ever be? Maybe not. But we've seen a performance increase on the ice just from being able to make some small changes, which has been really good, and obviously our coaching staff likes it as well.
Yeah, when do you find that point where it's good enough?
I mean, hopefully you don't. Hopefully it's a it's like one that can I principle, continual and never ending improvement.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're always looking to get better and to continue to improve. And I mean, as long as you're continuing to push the envelope a little bit and you don't see any regression, I think every day you just got to push to continue to get better and push to continue to idealize each individual for what they are and what they can be.
Cool. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the 1080 sprint. And
for sure.
It's a pretty cool piece of equipment for sure. And it's something you can use on the ice, off the ice. So first of all, describe what it looks like and how it functions, and then talk a little bit about what you're finding with that.
For sure. So the sprint itself is a box that's about about 3 feet long, a foot wide, and a half a foot tall. And it on the inside, it's all run by robotics. And so it comes with a tablet. You basically set specific parameters, whether you want a constant concentric speed, you want a constant eccentric speed, you want over speed, you want it to be a free wheel where it's only giving you concentric out, and then on the way back in it's just coming at a really slow rate, so you're not going to have any eccentric force against you on the way back in. The flywheel on the inside is about 200 yards long, so just about two football fields you can continue to run. So it's obviously you're never going to run out of room on a hockey rink. So you're not going to be skating at a high rate of speed and then all of a sudden run out of string and
basically
look like a cartoon character. But how we utilize it in association with the map is we get them first in the weight room doing a sequence of movements from hide and jumps to hockey starts to half kneeling starts to sprinting starts with our goalie shuffling, starting in a square position, externally rotating, pivoting and pushing to the right, same thing to the left. So just a series of movements where we can track power output and see, again, within the system we make a mark whether their first step was with their left leg or the right leg, if the major power production was coming from the left leg or right leg, and then we're able to mirror them on top of one another and see the difference between that left and right leg. And that's where we're obviously able to compare and see the difference between what we saw with the map. And that's where the correlations were so high. And then what we do is we take them onto the ice and do the same type of thing. We have them do same thing, starting from a left side. So we have them basically horizontal to the ice, left leg forward, starting basically crossing over to the left side and then crossing over to the right side. So you're having a push off with one leg is going to be the power leg. So again, you make a note of that. You're able to see what their power production is there. Then we have a straightaway sprint. Then we have basically what in football, I guess you call the 5-10-5. But the same thing, we're looking for change direction. And we do it both ways again. So we have them all stop one way. So you're basically pushing off with one leg, and then we do the same thing on the other side. Again, basically measuring what the starting and stopping force outputs are, and whether they have trouble getting out of one stop or accelererating through the other side, or whether decelerating on one side is less than the other. They have more difficulty on one side. So that's kind of what we're looking at. And obviously, we video it all because what you're able to see from a force standpoint, you also want to see visually. If like we talked about before, when you're seeing a guy skating and he's stopping on one side and it looks smooth, it looks effortless, and he goes to the other side, and you're like, man, that looks like a train wreck. There's obviously, it doesn't matter what the data says, you just know there's something not right there, something that we need to improve on. Whether it is a skill thing or whether it is a force discrepancy, that's why we do both on and off ice, so that because by the time we get onto the ice we know that there's a force production discrepancy or a mobility discrepancy, we're able to just have that kind of in our back of our minds. And as we're watching them go through these motions, we're like, you know what? Boom, the puzzle pieces come together. This is what's going on. We have a better angle to help improve this individual on the ice.
Nice. Yeah, and I think it's pretty clear. I mean, even in the gym, you can see, like, I've gotten to the point where I'm probably about 90% guessing what hand a player plays with just based on what leg they jump with better, right? So, you know, the top hand is usually going to be the more powerful leg because they're going to start up ice. But I guess that's a pretty clear test there, and I like the stop and start. On the straightaway, so like it's a V start, take off straightaway, can you tell, like, are they getting surges, like they're pushing much harder with their left leg versus the right leg in the straightaway stride?
So it's funny because you can for a certain phase. So in any skating stride, you know you have an acceleration phase, and then once you've reached that, your top end speed, you kind of start to level out. And so what you find from the data is when you take a look at the, obviously when they start in the skater stride, in the V start, you're going to step either with your right leg first or your left leg first. So right from there, you just make a note again, first leg or first step was with your right leg. Mm-hmm. So you know that every odd number of strides on the data you get is from their right leg. So if you're taking a look at it and he has actually a better push, more force production with that right leg, every third one for probably the first, I'd say, five strides, you're going to see a difference between the right and left side. And then once we get out of that and we've reached top speed, it starts to level out a bit and there's not as much of a discrepancy. So obviously, like we've said, it's not once you get to your top end speed that you're going to notice the difference. It's how long does it take to get to that speed and the efficiency of you getting to that top end speed that you're going to notice a real difference.
Okay. So that's just more backup data for you, or do you use those on ice tests to actually program things off ice or on ice?
So we work with our coaching staff a little bit, and certain guys that we know need work on their skating. Obviously, we work with our skills guys, our head coach, our assistant coaches, our position coaches on specific things that they need that we've identified. But more so from what I'm taking from this is, okay, we noticed that there's your left leg is stronger than your right leg. Okay, well, you know what? Let's try and close that gap a little bit. Let's do a little bit more single leg work with you. Let's work through a greater range of motion. Let's start. You don't have the hip mobility. that's where we go into our yoga group classes. I say yoga groups because that's how we break them down. What we work on specifically with our yoga instructor, and there's certain groups that work on specific things based on their needs. Corrective groups, they work on specific things again based on their needs. And then in our regen sessions, there's certain guys that are really tight through, obviously you can say this for a lot of hockey players, but through the psoas area, whereas other guys are so tight through the hamstrings and can't straighten their legs out. So there's different things that we focus on with certain guys to obviously increase these scores that we're seeing, and it's been working in the long run in terms of increased power production, increased symmetry between our legs, obviously decreased injury rates, which is always good, and then increased symmetry between the entire body, which ultimately, if we can make them better athletes, they're going to become better hockey players as well.
Nice. And obviously, this is an information-driven, I guess, series of tests, and you use a lot of information. Just to play devil's advocate a little bit, how much of this do you think would level out with good training? I mean, has there really been a time where you've really like pulled the reins back and said, "Holy smokes, this guy shouldn't be doing this. We need to get him going in another direction," or has it just been little minor tweaks?
No, a lot of it, like you said, a lot of it has been really minor tweaks. Like once you get to that level, I mean, let me back up. Some of our freshmen, I've said that for sure, where the avenue that I had them going on, or the avenue I wanted to take them on before we did this was one direction. And then after I saw the deficiencies they had, the lack of power for their size, their lack of strength overall for their size, I 100% had to change directions. And there's about four or five. I mean, we had a huge freshman class this year. We had 16 freshmen, and there was about three or four of them in that group that I was just like, man, I can't even keep you guys together. Like, I can't keep the freshman group together because I had such a large range of issues and such a large range of strength, power, even in their physical development. I had such a large range of guys. And obviously, hockey being a unique sport at the NCAA level, I had guys all about the age of 18 and the guys at the age of 21, all who are freshmen. So that's a three-year window that you have to kind of work around. And once I've had guys for a year, it goes more to what you said. Things start to level out. Things start to become very minor. But again, these minor changes are things that you're happy to see because you it gives you something to work towards. It gives you it's more confirmation to you that you're doing things the right way. You're helping kids develop, and that you're starting to see a healthier, better moving athlete, which, like I said before, it ultimately turns into a better hockey player, greater force production, decreased injury risk, and a more confident athlete too. When they feel good, when they know that they're prepared and they feel strong and their body feels good, obviously mentally they're going to be in a better place to perform for you as well. So that's what you see kind of after the first year being through this. But definitely 100% coming through initially and putting kids through this, I've had to change gears, haven't had to change paths that I had kids on or that I wanted to put kids on. And obviously that's something that comes with utilizing data to drive your program, where you have to be okay looking at something and saying, man, I'm not doing the right thing here, I have to change this, rather than being stubborn and saying, no, it's going to fix itself, we'll just keep trudging forward and go with it. But no, there was a couple instances where I've had to completely change what I wanted to do with a couple kids and move them slower, kind of slow cook them a little bit, and pull the reins back a little bit on them. But in the long run, it's gonna ultimately pay off for them and help them out down the stretch here.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen you guys improve as you've gone along in the year. I mean, there's a lot of factors there, but I think one of the coolest things about that is, you know, in terms of taking that long-term, really specific development approach, you have players at every level who survive on a certain skill set, right? So if you're a player who has survived on, you know, vision and positioning, and you're just more of like a smart player, and you can take that player and give them power, relatively symmetrical power, and create an explosive skater with that, I mean, that's a hell of a tool set. So, yeah, it's really cool. And I think it's really nice to be able to be specific, like you're able to be there.
For sure. No, you hit the nail on the head with, guys bringing just a natural instinct about them where, we hear about it all the time. Just their hockey sense is unbelievable, but he's an undersized forward, but he's survived and gotten to this point because of his hockey sense. Well, all of a sudden you take that hockey sense and you do some things with him off ice or from a education standpoint where you start working with him in the video room a little bit more, and you start working with him on his skating. You start working with him in the weight room, and like you said, providing a little bit more power, getting him stronger, doing these things, and you add another element to his game. Well, all of a sudden, someone looks at him 5-6 months later from a difference of September to January, and you're like, man, this kid looks like a different player. Well, he's added a completely different dimension to his game that wasn't there before. We talked about the acceleration aspect of it, where we had a couple kids who they're big, they're strong, but they just seemed slow. They were awesome at the USHL level, but all of a sudden they'd make the jump to the NCAA and it's one step faster, and they just seem like they're behind the eight ball a little bit. Well, all of a sudden come January, they're getting to pucks they never got to before. They're winning battles they never won before. They're finding themselves in positions to score goals and have doubled their point production in a span of 10 games, where the first 10 they played, they were rarely seen on the score sheet. So, or being in another lineup. So obviously there's a lot of factors that that influence that. Like I said, the video sessions, the just starting to learn the NCAA game, playing with more confidence, being in a better position emotionally, mentally. But ultimately, too, it's a whole system and sequence of things of how you do it. And when you're helping them and you have the right system in place, that's ultimately what becomes fun to watch and see the players develop.
Yeah, for sure. So how accessible is this equipment, the system, the 1080 system? I mean, is it cost prohibitive? I mean, is it something that coaches can use, you know, across the NCAA and
yeah, I mean, everything's out there. Obviously, like many things, you got to get certified through the 1080 map system, learning their technique, learning the philosophies behind it, learning the science behind it, understanding how it comes and gives its final output of data to you so that you can utilize it effectively, mm-hmm. For one. But two, the sprint's a little bit more of a costly item, again, ranging depending on what you get, but at least being able to utilize, the map is just purchasing the map itself, the mat, and then getting certified in, and away you go. And you're actually able to then have quantifiable screening data and a tool that you can utilize. But there's lots of ways to measure force. And kind of like we were doing before we had this sprint was taking our gymwear system and measuring force that way. Is it as accurate? Is it as versatile? No. But you're still able to get some type of force production data that you can then compare to your now quantifiable screen. You now have something that you can put numbers to, something that you can actually use a little bit more in depth than you could before.
So then, I mean, you've had the guys in heart rate monitors and accelerometers for a couple years now. How is the information you get from the sprint different from what you get with the accelerometers?
So within the accelerometer, you're able to track overall speed. So you have
Okay.
one entity. You
I
don't
see.
have separate entities. You're not able to see difference between right and left strides. You're not able to. You can guess based upon groin loading factor, the high speed sprints, high speed accelerations, high speed collisions. You get all that data, but it doesn't pinpoint down to there's your left leg, there's your right leg, there's your left leg, there's your right leg, or here's your starting sprint number
Okay.
from your right leg, left leg, and be able to actually lay one over top of the other. I'll give you a couple, I'll send you a couple screenshots of our on ice, our off ice data, even our map data. I can send you a couple screenshots of it, so you can actually see what you actually look at and the type of data you get, which is unbelievable. It's really, really effective in what you are able to see from, especially when you overlay them on one another. They just become so apparent. I mean, an example is you look at one of our players and a goalie, and he had this left hip external rotation and flexion discrepancy, the real big, where you're looking at about 190% to about 10% versus other legs. So vast difference. When he was younger, he had some hip issues and some surgeries and stuff like that before he got to us. So obviously there was that information that you have to take into consideration as well. But we worked, we put him on the ice and did some things, and you notice that, lo and behold, there was a butterfly or butterfly slide or a push in one direction or a change of direction to that opposite direction, that one leg, the power was always about, I don't think it's by coincidence, about 20 to 30% less than his other leg. And I started talking to our goalie coach about it, and he's like, yeah, he always gets up with a certain leg. He won't get up with the other one. Well, all of this starts to make sense. It all starts to bubble together. And then you start to work on things. You start to gain range of motion. You start to gain strength. You start to gain minimize that discrepancy between leg A and leg B, and you retest, and the power production, the overall acceleration between the leg A and leg B, it starts to minimize. It starts to get smaller. You have to give some of that credit, obviously, to Trags and working with a couple of our goalies on their technical aspect, and basically changing the way that they recover, changing the way that they do things. But it all works in a system. It all works together. And obviously, getting up with one leg, we would have noticed, we would have known, but we wouldn't have known why. We wouldn't have known well, there's more to it than just him not wanting to. There's more to it than just feeling more comfortable with it. There's a structural issue that we need to work on. There's a soft tissue issue we need to work on. There's a strength issue we need to work on. And so when we're able to quantifiably identify these things, we can make, I think, a lot more sustained changes. And it makes sense to the athlete, and we talk about buy-in all the time. When it makes sense to them, they can see it. All the puzzle pieces match together. They're like, oh man, that makes so much sense. Yes, that's exactly what I'm feeling. It's almost, it takes the, I don't want to say it takes the pressure off them, but a lot of times too, especially goaltenders, they take a lot of the burden upon themselves. It's my fault that I'm like this.
In
So
addition to some other goalie issues.
yes, they're not the norm, but what it does is it's like, okay, so if we continue to work on this or change this, or if I continue to do this, again, because sometimes consistency for coming in for extra work, coming in for some corrective work, not doing the same lifts or changing up certain things that for certain guys, they're like, why aren't I doing the same thing as this guy? Or continually coming to yoga or whatever it is, the consistency of things, it helps with that buy-in. Being able to see the changes over the course of time, being able to see the numbers, being able to understand what's actually going on within them, and that that we are making them better athletes and hockey players.
Nice. So a serious player development tool, and I think you did a really nice job with that video, which actually you're using for recruiting, so the players know right up front what they're going to be going through and how it benefits them. And I mean, that's an excellent sales job. We'll get that posted on the site. And we're also going to, we just shared it on Twitter if you don't follow us on Twitter. But yeah, we'll get it up on the site. And also, we'd love to get some of those overlays from you and just see what it actually looks like. But yeah, we'll have to wrap it up here. But there's definitely a lot to talk about in this. And it seems like you're using that well and using it to the guy's advantage. So, Justin, I really appreciate you coming on. And it's always good to talk to you. And as always, I think you're sort of leading the charge in this stuff, so it's great to talk to you and find out what's working and what we should continue with.
Well, Brian, I really appreciate your time and bringing me on. And like I always say to everybody, it's great to have people like you pushing this field forward and bringing all our like minds together, because obviously together we're a lot better than we are individuals. So thank you again.
All right, everybody, that's going to wrap up episode 49 of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today, and thank you to Justin Rothlingshuffer for joining us from Miami University. Justin may as well be the tech talk guy. Definitely a lot of great information there, and he's a great resource for us, so we really appreciate the time and effort he takes into getting us this great content. So remember, April 22nd, the Great Lakes Hockey Strength and Conditioning Clinic. And it's going to be one day, five speakers, and of course the social afterwards, where most of the business is done. So we're looking forward again to that this year. We hope you can join us. Guys, remember to check us out on Twitter. We're most active on Twitter. Facebook has fallen away. But we are most active on Twitter, and we're trying to keep things going there. And we've had some really great exchanges over the last couple weeks. So check it out. Follow us on Twitter. We do put a lot on Twitter that does not make the site. So, guys, until next time, be sure to train smart and check out hockeystrengthandconditioning.com, the world's greatest resource for training hockey players. Have a good day, everybody.